What is up, freaks? It's your boy Marty Bent here in a very, the most beautiful studio I've been in a while. I'm down the shore on a back deck. I'm sure you might be able to hear the propeller plane in the background flying over with some mad for a dive bar here in the city. I'm sitting looking at a computer screen, looking at my beautiful co-host, Matt Odell, who's somewhere else in this world right now. Matt, how are we doing?
What's up, freaks? In the very near future, hopefully we'll have, but we'll have plane ads that are advertising that the new hottest shitcoin.
No, it's not going to be the new hottest shitcoin. I've actually thought about this. I've looked it up. It's only $450 to $500 for one of those ads. And this summer, by the end of, by Labor Day, I'm going to buy one of these plane ads for South Jersey. It's going to be a Bitcoin ad. So this is actually a call to action for you freaks out there. We got to get a quick, like, I think less than 280 character quip on Bitcoin that we can put on a plane that people will see on the beaches. So get on Twitter.
280 character? What is it, a tweet?
Less than a tweet. Like an original tweet, like a 140 character tweet, like old school tweet. I think we'd have to get
it should just say stay humble, stacksats, tftc.io.
Let's make it happen.
Boom.
Yeah, we'll do that.
There you go.
If you guys want to help contribute to that ad, you can do so at tftc.io/contribute. Speaking of which, let's get into the price. The price right now, according to the TradeBlock XBX index, is $11,874.03. Looking up a block right now. We are currently at block. The internet down here is slow. Waiting. We are currently at block 583,814. And I don't have mempool stats right now. Actually, I do have mempool stats. I'm a mempool.space. There's about 3,057 transactions in the mempool right now, according to mempool.space.
Oh, mine says 27,000.
Well, different mempools, different nodes, you know?
No, I'm mempool.space.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it just went down. 2742. It keeps fluctuating.
Yeah, well, that's a mempool. It's organic.
Yeah.
And we're at 84 cents per sat. 84 sats per cent.
Yeah, it's the dime bag has been getting way less than 1,000 sats per final thought, which has been a little disconcerting, but also comforting knowing that the price is going up. But your penny's not going as long. Your dimes aren't going as far as they used to, people.
How about that price, man? This price action is pretty crazy.
Yeah, we again we're hovering around like 11.9 right now. We got up to 14. We touched 14, I believe, or not even. We got close to 14 about a week ago. Right when we spoke, like when we did the live episode, we were crashed. We crashed during the live episode down to like 11.2. So we're a little bit above where we were then.
Yeah, we started the live episode at the top, right?
I think
it was like
13
something.
Yeah.
There you go. We can't do any more live episodes. The price just dumps during them.
Yeah, we can't. But before we get into everything, we got to give a shout out to our sponsors here. Shout out to the Cash App. We finally have an official promo code with the Cash App. That's Stacking Sats, one word. If you haven't downloaded yet, if you have friends and family who haven't downloaded yet in the States, make sure you let them know. Download the Cash App. Use the code, promo code Stacking Sats. They will get $5, and then $5 will go to a charity called Owls Lacrosse, which I worked for in college. I volunteered for them. I was actually there when they first started in 2011, and they've actually had their full cycle of an eighth grader going from eighth grade all the way through college, and it's done some incredible stuff for the kids of Chicago, particular neighborhoods in the West Side and South Side. It's something I'm very proud to have contributed to, and something that I'm proud to contribute to now from afar. So if you guys download the Cash App, make sure you use the Stacking Sats promo code. And then on top of that, as you freaks know, you can buy Bitcoin on there, the first P2P app to allow you, P2P payments app to allow you freaks to do that. They recently allowed deposits on the app. So if you have Bitcoin and you want to send it to the Cash App to sell or send to somebody on the Cash App, you can do that now as well. Go to the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store and download the Cash App today. And then be remiss of us if we didn't give a shout out to our second sponsor, Unchained Capital. Freaks know all about them. They got the 203 multi-sig volts helping you take your financial sovereignty into your hands. Unchained will hold one of those three keys and sign for you if you are ever in a pinch and need help from them. Other than that, they've open sourced their multi-sig solution. So if you don't even want to use Unchained, you can use that open source tool that they've built. Again, it's an incredible team. On top of the Vault program, they have Bitcoin collateralized loans. So if you have BTC and you don't want to sell, friends don't let their friends sell Bitcoin, you can use Unchained's loan services as well. And if you guys go to www.unchained-capital/vaults today and sign up, you're going to get 3 free months of Safe Nina Moose's the Bitcoin Standard Research Bulletin. So go check that out. It seems like Safe actually just put out a website too with some great information as well. So check that out too. That was a free ad for Safe there.
Yeah, safeadine.com, right?
Yes.
And that was one domain I unfortunately didn't get my hands on before he got it.
I thought you would have had it, man. I thought you would have had it. And then, hey, we got 2 shout-outs this week, Matt, from the freaks out there. Thank you for contributing. A fellow TFTC fan and holder wants to buy a version 1 Bitseed. If you have one for sale, please DM at lowBTC on Twitter. That's at lowBTC, L-O-W-B-T-C. We'll pay Bitcoin on-chain or Lightning. Again, he's looking for a version 1 Bitseed. A very good friend of the pod, a collector, and is looking to add this Bitseed to his collection. He was the fellow who gifted us the Yamazaki when we did our first live show, Matt.
Yeah, that was quite delicious, that Yamazaki.
It went very quickly. We blew through that bottle. And then we have a second anonymous shout-out. It's not even a shout-out. It's just a statement. Bitcoin has more intrinsic value than gold because generating it turns energy directly into hard money, whereas gold has limited industrial use cases, which are far removed from the energy required to produce it. Just a good statement there. From a freak.
Fuck,
thank
yes.
you for that.
I love it.
Don't know who it was from. That's all it said. Hey.
We don't. It's anonymous?
It's anonymous, yeah.
Beautiful. We love it.
Yeah. All right, so on to the topics of the day. Been a busy week. It's 4th of July here in the United States of America, 243 years ago. The Founding Fathers signed the Declaration of Independence, telling King George to fuck off and starting this country that we now sit in. I think we're both in 2 of the original 13 colonies right now.
Yeah, damn right. Oh, geez.
Fact. And that's what I wrote about in the Bent today, just before we get into the topics. Like, Bitcoin is a modern-day revolution and a modern-day manifestation of freedom in the digital age. And again, like, Bitcoin is a revolution, and on a day like today especially, I think it's important to reflect on what we're doing here, the mission we're on, and sort of the gravity of this protocol and the effects that it'll have on the world and humanity going forward. Obviously, the Declaration of Independence had a huge impact on the course of history and how we've got to where we are today, and I would argue that January 3rd, 2009, with the mining of the Genesis block, will be looked back in retrospect hundreds of years from now as a similar type of Declaration of Independence from a monetary tyranny, from banking tyranny, if you will.
I mean, if the Founding Fathers had asked the king for permission to secede, he would have said no. Like, this is like it's that's inherent to the Bitcoin movement is that permission shouldn't be required.
Yeah, I think that was the whole reason why they declared independence, because they asked for permission to be represented in the king's parliament, and they said, no, fuck off. And they're like, all right, we will fuck off and create our own country.
Like, I'm sure the king wouldn't want you to do coin join either.
Definitely
if it was
not
around in his day.
He wouldn't be able to tax as much, you know. There's the Boston Tea Party would not have been as big of a party if there was coin joins back then and people were able to hide the wealth that they were trying to tax. So just reflect on it, freaks. This is, obviously Bitcoin, a lot of people get into it for the gains, quote unquote, and the price action, but there's a lot more going on under the hood and, philosophically and ideologically. This is a quiet, peaceful revolution too. It's the other beautiful thing. We don't have to revert to, a result to guerrilla warfare like our forefathers did, and attack the system head on with violence. We can do it with code and moving our finances into the system pretty peacefully.
And the other thing that's beautiful is not only is it a peaceful tool and a peaceful revolution, but it's also voluntary. You know, one of the issues when we did secede was that there was plenty of people in America at the time that didn't want to secede, but they didn't even have a choice. Like they had to get involved in everything that was going on. With Bitcoin, you know, and then they ended up, you know, brothers fighting brothers, right? That was the whole thing. With Bitcoin, like, if you don't think Bitcoin's a good idea, then, you know, ignore it. You're welcome to ignore it. We think that's probably a really horrible decision on your part. But you're completely welcome to ignore it while we do our thing.
That's a very good point to be made. This is completely opt-in. This goes back to Balaji and Naval's tweet threads from a couple of years ago on voice and exit. So we have a voice now and an opportunity to exit into a new system, and that's Bitcoin. And again, if you don't like it or don't agree with the implications of Bitcoin, you do not have to participate. Though if you do not participate, just be aware that your life will probably be affected in some tangential way due to Bitcoin's success or non-success.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have, no matter what, you're participating in this broken system we have, so you might as well participate in the fixed one.
Yes. Yeah, so just on a day like today, 4th of July, just reflect and think about the gravity of this, and the Latin phrase that I put at the end of the bend today, I think is a very, very, very important with this stuff, and it was written by, I don't know if I don't know if Thomas Jefferson was the first person to coin this Latin phrase, but it's a Latin phrase none the yet. And it's, let me pull it up here real quick. Excuse me. I haven't read Latin in so long. Malo periculosum libertam quam quietam servitutam. I definitely just butchered that, but when you translate it to English, it means, and a dangerous liberty seemed preferable to quiet servitude. So I would argue the quiet servitude of living under the current banking system is something that is corrosive and eats away at most importantly, people's purchasing power and their ability to save throughout time. And Bitcoin, it's noon here in the city. Sorry about that. We're going to have to go through some background noise here. All right. That's over.
Wow. Wow. They're trying to censor us, guys.
They are trying to censor us. Yeah, so that phrase in particular, I think it's important to think about. Bitcoin is it's almost a dangerous liberty, because we are confronting the state and their ability to print money, and central banks and their ability to print money, and obviously that is going to perturb some of the people in those places at some point. It already has to some extent, Brad Sherman here in the States. But it's not going to be an easy ride, but it is worthwhile. It is preferable to the quiet servitude of living under this oppressive, tyrannical banking system.
Be a citizen, not a subject.
Fact. All right, let's get on to the topics. That was our freedom spiel. 15 minutes of shooting the shit and talking about freedom and shout-outs and ads. There's some ads thrown in there, too. Let's start with the Sats app. Was announced yesterday by Casa. So Casa, the company that's making, has the multi-sig solutions. They have a node, a personal node for you. They announced the Sats app node yesterday. This is an app that you can use to connect with your Casa node. And they're working on something called Sats tags as well. And these will be sort of readable, human readable addresses that you'll be able to send Bitcoin to within the Sats app, trying to make the UX around address creation and invoicing a little better for Bitcoiners, for Casa users particularly. Matt, thoughts?
So Marty, I'm really conflicted, man, right now. This app is very cool. I'm glad they released it. Basically, you know, they have their multi-sig, and then they have the node, and there was no way to interact with your node mobily, like on a phone. And they didn't want to integrate, which makes sense to me. They didn't want to integrate it into their multi-sig app. They wanted to keep it separate. So they came out with a new app that allows you to easily connect to your Casa node through Tor. It seems like it's very easy to use, nice UX. So very happy about that. That we need more of that. Also, you can, because it goes through Tor, you can just connect to it from anywhere. You don't have to be like on the local network. So it makes, you know, accessing the Lightning Network with your own full node in like spendable environments, like what we saw at Bitcoin 2019 conference, where they had the open node arcade machines. Like if you're in that situation with the Sats app, you'll be able to easily pay for the arcade, you know, no matter where you are, through your own full node. I also like I like the push towards Sats being the standard, right? We've been pushing for that here at TFTC for a while now, and I want to see more and more apps go with Sats as the standard. My main issue is with this announcement is I'm getting sick and tired of companies using Bitcoin terms as the name of their products. You know, it's like I'm not gonna be talking to a noob and they're gonna be talking about how they sent Sats from the Sats app or to the Lightning app to the blockchain app. Like, fuck, are you fucking kidding me? It's so confusing, man. Yeah. It's like, it's ridiculous.
No, we touched on this a couple of weeks ago when Lightning Labs released their Lightning app. It is cause for some confusion, or could be cause for some confusion, and something that should be considered when making products. That's something why I try to stay away from like crypto and Bitcoin and stuff with like when I was making Marty's Bent and Tales from the Crypt, just trying to not make it overtly tied to Bitcoin, and hopefully to help avoid some confusion.
Yeah, exactly. I like, look at Zap, right? He called it Zap. It like, it has an allusion towards, you know, an insinuation towards lightning makes zaps, right? Mm-hmm. But it's a different name. It's got, everyone knows exactly what it is. You Google it, you know exactly what it is. We're talking about it, we know exactly what it is. He didn't have to call it, you know, the Lightning app. Or, you know, the Sats app. Like, that kind of bothers me. I just want to see less companies doing that. I was thinking, you know, how many moons does Jupiter have?
I think Jupiter has eight or something like that. Maybe 12.
Well, how many?
Maybe 12. 12
moons. Those are great product names. they have the allusion to the moon. We're going to the moon. But we're not even going to our moon. We're going to Jupiter's moons. And there's so many of them, and they have, like, crazy names. Use that.
Yeah, there are some good Jupiter name. I'm pulling up Jupiter moon names right now.
I think that's a good idea. I want to see more of that. You know, I didn't really – the Sats tag, right, is like – it's like a cash – instead of the Cash app, it's the Sats app. And instead of the Cash tag, it's the Sats tag. And, you know, I guess it works. So, yeah. You know, it is what it is. But it's always exciting to see new ways to use your full node easily as, like, an everyday person. You don't need, you know, the setup is minimal. You plug it in. It runs. You connect it with your phone. You're good to go.
Yeah, let us be clear that our only consternation is with the naming of the product. It seems like a very, very good product and one that will help push UX and usability of Bitcoin forward, which we very much appreciate. And hats off to the Casa team for getting this out there to their users. They've been working hard. I know they were pumped to release this. So it is a useful app, despite the name. And I was way off. There are 79 moons on Jupiter.
Look at that. Look how many startups you have. Like, that's great.
Europa.
Some products.
Io. Callisto. Callisto is a good one.
Callisto would be a great name for a Lightning app. Or Europa would be good, too.
Hey, this isn't the first time we've given out free business ideas here on TFTC. So we're going to wake up in a couple months. There's going to be a Callisto app. on the Lightning Network. You heard it here first. So yeah, again, shout out to the Casa team for launching that, pushing UX forward. Great to see it again. We love everybody building on Bitcoin. We talk about not a lot. We talk about Casa. We talk about Unchained. They're incredible companies working on different parts of the stack, some of them overlapping, and anybody working on this stuff, pushing it forward, you got to tip their cap to them.
Yeah. I mean, I really like the idea of usernames, right? Pay to usernames, like the Sats tag. Like that is, you know, everyone, one of the biggest, pre-coiner complaints is that, you know, no one's going to be able to use the address formats. You know, it needs to be like email or something like that. So like that can be solved through like centralized and semi-centralized, methods with usernames and whatnot.
Yes. No. No, it's a great, and I hope we see more of that because, yeah, showing normies a regular public key is never an easy task, and it's always usually pretty daunting for them.
Oh yes. So if any of you freaks have a Casa node, download the Sats app, link it to your Casa node, and then let us know like your thoughts on it, because neither of us have one to test it out on. So let us know.
Yeah. Please let us know. And then you put this in there, 300 tickets already sold for Bitcoin 2020 next year.
How boss was it that they offered them for $20.20?
Yeah.
And all those tickets were sold for Bitcoin through Lightning or on-chain. That's pretty, you know, no one uses Bitcoin. Well, there's at least 300 people that just did.
Yeah, exactly, Noriel. Nobody uses Bitcoin. Nobody buys anything with Bitcoin. There's 300 people at least buying tickets to this one conference. And yeah, so it's $20.20, pay via Bitcoin. When we were talking to the conference organizers, we were like, yo, you might want to keep this price at this, you might want to keep this price point while Bitcoin's at this price level. Because as we get closer to the halving, the time of the conference, the Bitcoin earned may be worth far more than a regular ticket sold for US dollars.
Yeah, I think they're hodling it. But they did, bad news, they did announce with the 300 sold that they are no longer offering that deal.
Damn.
It's now $100.
Hey, well, you missed out, freaks. Still a great cost.
We tweeted about it.
Still a fucking deal. $100 for a conference is not bad at all.
Yeah, I mean, the crazy thing is those first 300 tickets, they don't even have the date yet or the venue. They're like March next year. And people, you know, this first conference was great. America has needed like a major big Bitcoin conference, I think, for a while. All the existing ones, like the North American Bitcoin Conference in Miami, Consensus and whatnot, you know, they just haven't cut it. Magical Crypto was supposedly pretty good, but it's still called Magical Crypto in the name of the title, so it kind of disqualifies it, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree. And yeah, so check that out. Tickets have been bumped up to $100. So it was we had a great time. I believe we'll be doing another live show there next year. At least that's what we are toying with right now. It was a lot of fun. If you guys can make it out to wherever the conference is next year, highly recommend it. Next topic, LND version 0.7 was released, and this release was a pretty big one. It comes with watchtowers, reliable payment tracking, better fee control with CPFP, smarter routing, and improved performance, and more. So this is watchtowers are officially in the LND version 0.7 beta. Reliable tracking is a thing now, and this is just another example of slowly but surely fleshing out the Lightning Network, building utility and tools that make it more user-friendly, and this is a big step forward for the Lightning Network in particular. Any thoughts, Matt?
Yeah, this is big news. Yeah, this is big news. Yeah, they just keep stepping forward. I think the watchtowers is a really big deal. Yeah, it's just good to see. I mean, I haven't tested it out yet myself.
Yeah, watchtowers, we haven't tested it out, but were you at BitDevs when Will Byrne
demoed it? That was awesome.
So we'll give us a nice demo, and watchtowers, they might just serve as, like, in the future, just people are just disincentivized to even try to maliciously steal the other end of a channel, because they know there's potential of a watchtower watching that, and they'll get their money stolen. So it's almost like, hey, like in a bodega. I think we said this a couple of weeks ago. It's like the sign at the bodega that says, "Hey, you're being watched. Smile, you're on camera."
It's like a herd immunity.
Yes.
Like they won't try, because if they do get caught, then they lose everything. They end up losing money. So the key is to make the punishment so severe that, you know, even if they get away with it like one or two times, the third time just makes them lose, you know, more money than they made.
Exactly. So shout out to the L&D team for pushing that out. I've been using Lightning more and more every week. I've been giving a lot of dime bag demos to people to show them how microtransactions can work with Bitcoin.
You know, the child pays for parent support is really useful too. Now that I'm looking at the changelog,
is that for channel opening?
I really like. Yeah, I assume so. And channel closing, yeah. I imagine. But that's pretty great because then you can really. I really like the UX, the flow of child pays for parent as opposed to like replaced by fee, because like you don't have to do anything ahead of time. You're just trying to pay the lowest fee, and if you need to bump it in the future, you just send another transaction that bumps it. Like Samurai has had that integrated for a while, and it's really clean. I remember I used it during the last fee crisis. It was super useful.
Yeah, no, it's. Can we go into the intricacies of the difference between replaced by fee and child pays for parent?
Well, I mean, I think the big difference from a user perspective is that for a replaced by fee transaction, you have to signal it as a replaced by fee transaction before you do it.
Yep.
So like if you didn't do it ahead of time, like you're out of luck. But with child pay, because most people don't realize that they need the feature until they have a transaction that's stuck for a week.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So at that point, it's kind of too late if you haven't already done it.
Yeah, you'd have to construct a transaction with replaced by fee as like a sort of a base case, which isn't the way most users are constructing transactions right now.
So, right, and I don't think there's much wallet support for it, because the only one I know is Electrum that signals for RBF when you send, and you have to check the option.
Yeah, you have to toggle it. So yeah, child pays for parent is you basically construct a whole new transaction that says, hey, I'm going to replace this transaction with a higher fee. Please ignore that and use this one.
Well, with RBF, you're like actually replacing the transaction, but you're still paying both fees. With child pays for parent, my understanding is, it's like you're sending another transaction.
Yes.
That's like the unconfirmed change of the previous transaction. So it's connected still.
Yeah.
So then they get confirmed together. That's my understanding, at least. I might be completely wrong on that.
I could be too. But It's good that L&D is implemented, and if you are opening and closing channels with other people, and you happen to send a low fee at first, this is now an option for you to expedite the opening or closing of those channels. And the routing, they
said that smarter routing. I don't know what that means, but that's one of the things that that Ketaminer said on our last podcast, our conversation with the Noddle guys. He said that's really important, so that's really good to see too.
Yeah, if you haven't.
Okay, shall we go to Zap?
Yeah, I was going to say, if you haven't checked out that Noddle episode, go check it out. Michael and Asquedo are two very good friends. We had a great conversation. And yeah, we talked about network routing at one point in depth, and Lightning Network routing definitely needs, as a topography, definitely needs a lot of help and a lot more eyes, if you will. But yes, let's move on to Zap desktop. Version 0.5 was released this week. Jack tweeted out, I believe, yesterday or the day before. And so this comes with a bunch of new upgrades as well. Were they on mainnet now? Yeah, so they're fully supporting mainnet. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's the big one. The big one is like they're fully mainnet supported Neutrino Lite wallet now. Similar to Lightning's desktop wallet for a little bit now, right?
Yeah. So they're officially on mainnet now, which is a big step. And Zap is, like we were talking about them earlier, another team that's creating great UX. I use the Zap app on my phone every day to see what's going on with our TFTC.
But that's with our own node.
Yes.
Which connects remotely to the node. But right, this now lets you, like, I tested it out. I just tested out the new version, like 20 minutes ago, and it syncs within like a minute and a half, 2 minutes. It syncs. It defaults to BEC 32 now. You deposit into it. You can change that in the settings, and then you're good to go. I like that they don't default to autopilot, which I think is still like premature to use autopilot. It does more harm than good. And so you just open it, and then you can make your own channels. You can open a channel with us. You can open a channel with Pierre, and it defaults to private channels. So I think this is the key thing here, though, is you're not running your own node, right? So you're using Neutrino, and there's a big trade-off there. It's always more private, and you can verify your own transactions if you go through your own node.
Yeah. No, it's, again, incredible sort of push forward. And on top of this, the mainnet Neutrino stuff, they have channel backups. They've changed their preferences and improved channel management as well. And this is actually, I'm actually happy you mentioned like private channels, because that was something that was going on Twitter earlier this week. A lot of meth heads were calling out the Lightning Network for decreased capacity. But it is important to note that decreasing observable capacity could be because people are moving their channels to private channels instead of public channels.
Yeah, and anyone who's loading up the Lightning Labs wallet or loading up Zap now, the Light wallets, like their nodes don't show up publicly. They don't publicly broadcast. Their channels don't publicly broadcast. And that's how the majority of people that are like non-routing nodes are going to interact with this network, is that you either run your own node, or you do a Light client, and then you just connect with one or two private channels out to like a bigger routing node, and then you settle out the balance with something like loop out, so then you have inbound capacity, you have outbound capacity, and you become like a fringe user, like on the outside of the mesh. So don't use capacity as a metric. Don't, get sold off on that.
Yeah. It's more intricate and more nuanced than just looking at pure capacity. You have to take into consideration which channels are private and which are public. And it's becoming a lot easier for channels to be natively private, and then there's a lot of services that are popping up that are going private first as a sort of product ethos.
As for the new Zap features, they made the interface way nicer. You can choose like your Block Explorer and stuff like that, which is really cool. I mean, we already like Zap. Zap's our favorite app to interact with our nodes. But the channel backup feature is strictly for if you create a Light wallet, right? So when you set it up, they give you your seed words, then they verify your seed words. You enter 3 seed words to verify. And then the last step is you choose a backup location that's encrypted by your password. So you can either store that in the cloud, or you can store that locally, and it just automatically does it for you, which is really fantastic to way to handle the backups, like pretty seamless for the user.
Yeah. Again, shout out to Zap pushing the UX and usability of Bitcoin and the Lightning Network forward. Again, slowly but surely, freaks. We're 10 and a half years into this revolution. A lot of people like to shit on Bitcoin and Lightning Network for their UX, their current state of the user experience of the protocols. But again, these are networks and protocols, excuse me, just burped, that we expect to be around for centuries, if not millennia, and to expect all this to be fleshed out within the first decade is just asinine, in my opinion. So as we see, steady progress is being made, and it's encouraging. Next up, we got Cold Card. They just upgraded their firmware. Big upgrade for them. Now supports creating seed words with by rolling dice. So you can roll six die to create entropy for your seed phrases, which is really cool and really sort of drives home the point of being a sovereign individual and really taking your financial freedom into your own hands and making sure that you are not getting screwed at any point of the supply chain or from some random entropy creating device.
Right. So the worry is like you create a seed on a Trezor or a Ledger or a cold card, and the source of randomness doesn't have proper entropy, so it's not actually truly random, or it's not random enough. I don't know if anything can ever be truly random. So if you use dice, you can basically generate the randomness yourself. Now, a lot of, you know, using dice to create private keys is not a new thing. But a lot of times it's a complicated process usually, and you usually have to use like a special dice, you know, like a bigger
20-sided die,
more
fate
numbers
like
on it.
Yeah.
So this uses like a standard 6-sided dice, just like whatever you find in like your Yahtzee board or something, which is awesome. Everyone has like way too many 6-sided dice to begin with. The second thing is it all goes through the cold card, so it's like really easy, presumably, to use. I haven't tested it out yet. I plan to this weekend. Today is purely for a celebration with friends and family and RHR. But the third thing that's really cool about this is, so using 6-sided dice, it takes a while to get the entropy you need. So what cold card does is you can either do it all yourself, like very long process, or you can have cold card create the seed just like they normally create it. And then you can add dice entropy on top of it, which I think is a really cool UX way of doing it.
So like a 25th word phrase via dice rolling?
No, they literally add it into the entropy of the whole seed phrase. So the seed phrase changes as you add new dice rolls into it. And then you can add a passphrase of your choosing on top, of course, as well. So that's pretty fucking awesome, I think.
That's fascinating as hell. And I actually just picked up, just ordered a few cold cards myself. I think we're going to be experimenting and doing demos with them in the future. So look out for that on the site. I'm very excited to get my hands on them and start experimenting with them, especially because now with this update as well, with their Wasabi support, they removed extra info from a skeleton file. They changed to XFP Endian and added version fields, so they're just making their Wasabi integration easier and more useful. So for me, I mean, we've been talking a lot about hardware devices and what you can trust and what you can't, and I don't want to jinx cold card, but it seems like they've got the security and the security first principle down pat, and something that I'm going to be using more in the future, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, I really like the idea of as a simple, pretty cold storage with privacy and sovereignty mixed in, setup being cold card plus Wasabi plus full node, right? And the new Wasabi update that they're going to release soon has a UX change there where it lets you know, based on the color of your connection on the bottom, whether or not you don't have Tor on, which is hard to turn off Tor. You have to like go into the developer settings or whatever. Don't do that. If you're in SPV mode where you're fetching filters from the Wasabi server, or if you're running through your own full node. So it'll be super easy to just run your full node, connect it to Wasabi, connect it to cold card. And I think that could be a really good solution for a lot of people.
Yeah. So shout out to Rodolfo and team for pushing that out and continuing to make the cold card pretty fucking badass. I couldn't tell if this is real. So this is real. This is from the financialservices.house.gov file. So the U.S. House of Reps Committee of Financial Services asked Facebook to put a moratorium on the launch of Calibra, whatever it is, whatever they are. So it seems
Libra. It's called Libra. The wallet is Calibra.
Yes. So Maxine Waters came out and asked Zuck, like, yeah, don't do this. You're and it's crazy because I thought I couldn't tell if the letter was real or not because it almost read like satire because they were basically just explaining how Bitcoin can attack the state's power of money, but focusing their ire on Facebook and Libra. So yeah, the state, yeah. The U.S. At least the Financial Services Committee seems to be scared of Libra. They think it would compete and potentially undermine the dollar in the long run. So they came out and admitted that in a letter to Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, I mean, companies can't just be their own central bank. Like, this is why Bitcoin exists.
Right. So what do you think? Do you think they, you think Facebook fights back? Do you think they tell the government to fuck off, or do you think they bend the knee?
You know, I mean, the freaks know how I feel. Even before this, I was saying that they weren't going to let them launch.
We had a long conversation the day after the Bitcoin 2019 conference with somebody who was a Libra bull.
Yeah, I mean, Facebook is already a huge target without this mess. You know, there's multiple presidential candidates calling to break them up. So, who knows? The only way Facebook's able to get away with this is if they give the U.S. government like a shit ton of power over the system, in terms of both surveillance and control of some of the monetary elements. And so if that's the case, then, you know, it just further solidifies that Libra doesn't compete with Bitcoin, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. It's funny that they decided to come after Libra, but other than Brad Sherman again, nobody's really, and that's the beauty of Bitcoin. Maybe nobody has done it yet because they literally can't. Like, nobody has sent a letter to anybody telling them to stop using and running Bitcoin. And again, this is driving home the value prop of Bitcoin. There's nobody that this Financial Services Committee could send a letter to shut down Bitcoin. It is a hydra that cannot be killed.
Right. I mean, they can't shut it down with just a letter. They would have to do more than that.
Exactly.
Letters are easy to write, right? So
very easy to write. Finding and bombing mining servers is not as easy. Or it's palatable. Two more topics here. Or four more topics here. And then we'll wrap up and get on with our 4th of July. Cloudflare went down due to a faulty upgrade. I believe they pushed an upgrade and there was something that basically burned out their CPU power, their CPU caching or something like that. And it took down, I don't know the exact number of websites, but it took down a good portion of the internet the websites that are using Cloudflare for anti-DDoS attack safety. So this was a big wake-up call for the people using the internet. Like, wow, a lot of companies depend on this one centralized service.
So let's explain how Cloudflare works. Cloudflare's business model is one of the most common ways to attack a site is a DDoS attack. We've seen DDoS attacks happen all the time. Basically, you take over a bunch of computers or a bunch of devices, and you have them all hit a website at the same time. I think like Aaron Schwartz also had like ways to protest using DDoS attacks where like people would like install an app on their computer and it would just they would voluntarily do it and it would automatically take part in the DDoS. So basically you just keep hitting a server until it goes down or it just is unreachable. And this is also why like CAPTCHAs exist, right? Like, where are you a human? Prove you're a robot. So what Cloudflare does is it sits in between the user and the site. So when you go to the site and you hit the site, the first thing you hit is one of Cloudflare's servers. Then Cloudflare is making an educated guess on whether or not that you're a bot attacking or if you're a real person. They might give you a CAPTCHA, they might not, and then they send you on to the existing service. And one of the issues is that Cloudflare is on so many sites, especially like in the Bitcoin space, Bitcoin exchanges, stuff like that, because because there's massive economies of scale in their business. Because the more customers they have, the more servers they're able to afford around the world. The more servers that they could bounce things off of gives them massive economies of scale. And Cloudflare really got ahead of this in like the 2012, 2013, 2014 era. I remember people getting angry in the Bitcoin community about people using Cloudflare then. And it was because Cloudflare offered a free product that like scaled. It was a freemium that scaled in, and they basically, you know, locked all these people, got all these people in. And now they're just so massive that it's really hard for upstart competitors to join the market.
What are their largest competitors out there?
Yeah, exactly. Like I don't even know.
Yeah.
But like pretty much I think all the Bitcoin exchanges use Cloudflare. And the other issue is like from a privacy perspective is that they're sitting in between all these users and the websites in question. So they can see, you know, who's coming and going on these websites. It's a major privacy concern.
Is there how do we solve this problem? Like, is there, other than CAPTCHA, what are like the alternatives to DDoS attack protection?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not an easy problem to solve. I'm sure people are working on it.
What if you had to pay sats to access a website? Think that would.
People have proposed that. That's an idea. It's like a paywall CAPTCHA. Yeah. Or like a lot of people proposed for a while, they were saying, you know, you do like a proof of work CAPTCHA. So like costs money to do that. You know, this is like,
let's bring
this
back
is
hash
why
cash.
Bitcoin transaction fees exist, right? Because if it was free to send a Bitcoin transaction, like when we had the spam attacks on Bitcoin were basically DDoSs. They were just denial of servicing. If the transactions are cheap enough, then it costs you nothing to just flood the network with transactions.
Yeah. So it's a problem that's doesn't seem to be very well solved, and it doesn't seem like it's going to go away. We're very dependent on Cloudflare, as we found out this week. Just be aware of what services are using it. I believe on some exchanges, the price of Bitcoin was showing some indexes were showing like $6 Bitcoin just because they couldn't access the exchange API data. So that's just like another attack vector, social attack vector, if you will. Well, it's part technical, part social, where somebody could use Cloudflare to socially attack the masses into thinking that something's happened to Bitcoin when it hasn't.
I mean, it should be mentioned, as Pomp made sure to mention on Twitter, that Bitcoin didn't go down. That if you were running your own node and your own wallet was connected to your node, you could participate in the Bitcoin network just as you would have otherwise.
Yeah, no. Thank you for Pomp for always pointing out when Bitcoin survives and when other things go down. Bitcoin never shuts down.
No. Bitcoin does sometimes. It has in the past, but very, very negligible amount.
99.999%.
I don't think
percent of the time it'll be up.
Yeah, I mean, you shouldn't. There's a website. What is it? Bitcoin uptime. I feel like you shouldn't say never though, because like it literally has. It has been down.
It's true. True. March 2013.
Like what, in 2011, 2013? Those are the last two times, right?
Yeah, there was
2010 and 2013.
Yeah.
Bitcoin has been up for 99.983936344%
yes.
of the time.
Yeah, and I believe...
Like that's what we should be saying.
I believe July 2010 was a Coinbase reward bug where there was like an 8 billion Bitcoin Coinbase reward, but it was forked out within 100 blocks before the Coinbase was given to the miner, the miner was allowed to touch the Coinbase transaction. And then March 2013 was a consensus bug, right? That forced the hard fork. So be aware.
Luckily, both of those were early. But yeah. But just don't say never, but it's pretty much always up. And if when you're comparing it to the banks, it's particularly brutal because the banks are like, they're closed today in America. The stock market's closed today. They close every weekend, you know, so they just can't even compete. Like, even if, you know, we have a couple hours here or there where Bitcoin is down, they're not even close.
True. Yeah. So be aware. Be aware. This is a be aware segment of this episode. next, Hong Kong. Hong Kong, they were back in the streets. They took over the legislator. The protesters broke into the legislator building. They put up a British colonial flag and graffitied the legislative building. So it seems like things there are heating up. And Kyle Bass this morning was tweeting about the Hong Kong dollar peg sort of disconnecting from its peg with the U.S. dollar. So it seems like in Hong Kong in particular, things are getting tumultuous. The more I'd like to focus on the protest and the taking over the legislature right now. That's like a huge fuck you to mainland China. And it'll be very, very interesting to see how Xi and company responds to this overt middle finger to the Chinese regime.
Didn't the HKD peg, it went up though in value, right?
I got to look at the chart.
Why? That I don't understand what's going on.
I cannot speak to exactly what's going on either. Let me see.
But what's Kyle's point there?
Let me see.
He's saying it goes up first and then it falls. Is that what he's saying?
Seems it's coming on. I would imagine
violently up and then it.
I imagine maybe there's a demand right now. People are storing their Hong Kong dollars in treasuries denominated in that currency, and maybe they're dumping those treasuries for Hong Kong dollars, which is pushing the price up. This is complete speculation. I have no idea, but that may be something that forces the appreciation of that. And then yes, maybe it's a step into getting out of Hong Kong is selling those treasuries, which forces the currency up, and the next step is getting that currency into a sounder vehicle, maybe Bitcoin, maybe gold, maybe the U.S. dollar.
Right.
That would make sense to me, but again, I don't know. I do not know that to be a fact at all. I'm just speculating.
Right. I mean, I think everyone's speculating, including Kyle, but he's the expert. So I was trying to read into what he was saying, and it was a little bit difficult. But anyway, two things I would touch on about Hong Kong is that one was while the latest protests were broken up, like me and thousands of other people on Twitter were like able to watch live streams from people.
That was so cool. Thanks for sharing that link, dude.
How crazy is that? Like all it takes is like you have a phone and you have an internet connection and people like across the world can view it live. And like we're not going through like CNN or anything. Like that's fucking crazy. They don't have like a huge setup or anything. They just have a phone.
Yeah. It's the beauty of the digital age, the information age. Like this was talked about in The Sovereign Individual. Like individuals are going to be the journalists and the newscasters of the future. And we have these supercomputers in our pockets that can send information globally around the world. And you can turn that little HD camera on and provide news, provide actual data and information to other human beings. You don't need the gatekeepers anymore, which is crazy.
Yeah, that like blew my. Sometimes like the little things that like you kind of take it for granted, and then while you're taking it for granted, you're like, "What the fuck?"
Well,
crazy.
That's how I first got hooked on the Twitter. It was during 2011, 2012 when things were popping off with Syria and ISIS. Like that's when I realized the value of Twitter and the individual journalist on the ground. That's sort of being able to follow locals. And get their perspective on things that were happening was very eye-opening for me.
Yeah, I remember Reddit, too. Like, they have a Syrian civil war there. Reddit, whatever Reddit section is called. That was pretty. And also, I remember when Bin Laden got assassinated, the first report was, like, from some random Pakistani guy tweeting it out.
Yeah, and Gaddafi, too, when he got assassinated, I'm pretty sure that was live-streamed as well.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
We're entering a new era here, man. Like, this has never been possible before, so it should be interesting.
The implications are vast, freaks. Just the implications are vast. Be aware. Another addition to the be aware t- topic.
And then the other thing I'd like to touch on about Hong Kong, just again, is like, imagine how freaked out you would be if you own like a $60 million building in Hong Kong, or like a $100 million, like if like 90% of your net worth is like wrapped up in Hong Kong real estate. There's like all these Hong Kong families. That's crazy. Like, they must be freaking out.
Yeah. I mean, for good reason too. Like, it, again, that's why I'm very, very, very interested to see how China reacts to this. I don't think they're going to react lightly. It would be astonishing if they're like, hey, you guys obviously want your autonomy here. I don't think that's going to happen. And I feel like an asshole sitting here, like at the beach, like talking about the strife of the Hong Kong people. But I worry for them. I feel that China's going to come down with an iron fist.
Yeah, I mean, we stand with them, and all the power to them. They're impressive.
Very well organized protesters, and you can tell they feel the need to fight for their rights, to fight for their freedom, to fight for their autonomy, and it is inspiring, nonetheless. Or excuse me, inspiring if nothing else. That's what I meant to say. And then staying on China, Chinese border guards are putting spyware in one province in particular, the Xinjiang border. Border guards are putting spyware on tourist phones. Matt, I'm sure this makes you pumped. I'm sure you're excited about this.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess it was like a triple report, but the Guardian, New York Times, and someone else. This is a province. It's on, I don't know how to pronounce it. I think you did a pretty good job. It's on like it's a border province, and it's right next to Tibet. I think they've been cracking down there pretty hard to begin with. So now anyone who enters in or out from there gets their full phone gets downloaded. Everything that gets on, you have to unlock it and hand it to, the border guards, and then they install the spyware, they download everything, and then they give you back the phone. Yeah.
So what is your advice to Westerners traveling to China?
Oh, well, I mean, I would never go to China. That is a rule that I'm really upset about it, because I really want to go to China. I feel like I missed my, you know, we fucked up because we're like public-facing Bitcoin figures. So I feel like public-facing Bitcoin figures definitely shouldn't go to China. But anyway, if you're traveling in general, I think this is going to become more common. We've seen the British do it. We've seen Americans do it. I think we talked about this on the last podcast with the Noddle guys. Is that basically you have no legal rights when you go through these borders. They can put you in a room for like 14 hours until you decrypt your drives. So you should go through with the bare minimum at all times. Just every time you travel, just assume that just everything that you have with you is just going to be searched and gone through and maybe taken from you. Get a travel phone. Don't keep anything on the travel phone. Like, wipe your computers before you travel with them. You know, then if you need to, back them up and then restore them when you get home. Like, stuff like that. Just be... encrypt everything, but like they can encryption, you know, only helps so much. If they throw you in a room and they say decrypt it, what are you going to say? Like, oh well, I encrypted it, but then I forgot it. Like, really? Like, they don't. They know you're full of shit.
I have 6 concussions. I have no idea. I forgot. It just slipped my mind. You know. Hey.
Yeah, it's not plausible. Great. I think this is going to happen more and more.
Yeah. No. Again, and like we touched on at the beginning of the episode, this is stuff that needs to be fought for. It is a revolution, and Bitcoin probably plays hand in hand with the data revolution of self-sovereign data and keeping your data out of the hands of grubby politicians and corporations. And obviously, they want that data, and they're forcefully taking it from people at borders now. So again, huge be aware episode. Be aware, it's happening. Travel safe.
Yeah, I mean, wait till like once. Like, Bitcoin gets bigger too. There's even more incentive for them to play these games, at borders, because they don't know. They don't know if you're traveling with money or not. So even if you're not, even if you're being honest, It's gonna get. I think I love traveling personally, and I've been blessed to be in a good financial position at a young age. So I am trying to travel as much as possible right now, just in general, not even Bitcoiners related. I think right now we're probably in like the peak of travel convenience. Like we can go as Americans, we can go to Europe, just go all around in Europe. Europeans can go pretty much anywhere. They can go all around in Europe. Like travel is super easy. And you just got to take advantage of it right now, because I think it's going to get way more difficult. And then we'll be taking like airships from our citadels, between our citadels and shit like that.
Well, I hope you're wrong for the sake of our society.
Me too.
But hey, if current trends are pointing towards an outcome, it seems to be the one that you just described. But again, we got to fight back. Speak up, freaks, speak up, stand up, fight for your rights. Right, you gotta, like the quote at the end of the book, like quiet servitude. That's what we're slipping into. You gotta fight for your right to be a free human in today's day and age, especially in the digital age where it's considerably easier for nefarious actors to sort of control you, and your data and your travel and your being and your financial being and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't care about your privacy, about your sovereignty, like your rights, like nobody else is going to like care about it for you.
Yeah. Last topic. We're over an hour. We'll end it on this. Financial Times coming out and officially prompting the question, is Bitcoin acting as a safe haven asset in this current geopolitical macro environment? And I've been writing about this for months now. I think, yes, it is. And it's crazy to see the Financial Times even appeasing this narrative.
I mean, you can see me over here. I'm all smiles. This is my favorite narrative. It's the overarching Bitcoin narrative. I think ultimately it will be a safe haven. And I think we could meme it into safe haven status quicker. It's pretty much still a risk asset, but right now it's not behaving like one in this macro landscape. And I think part of the reason is because we fell so hard, which was really nice. It exhausted all the sellers. So if we're in a situation here where we're like leading into the halving and we have all this other adoption price pressure pushing us up at the same time as this macro landscape unfolds, then we're basically like the safe haven narrative becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
And, it's beautiful.
Well, and let's not just denigrate Bitcoin as a safe haven. It's just a narrative. It is a good safe haven. Like, it is a good place to save and store your capital from people who are trying to take it from you. Like, it is the definition of a safe haven. It is a haven from a system that is continuously taking your money from you and taxing you and confiscating your goods. It is a haven from that system.
Oh no, yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, look, if you're in Hong Kong, like, I'd rather have Bitcoin than real estate in Hong Kong. You're in Venezuela, you know, you're in Iran, all these different places. When does Bitcoin supplant the US dollar or, you know, gold as like the world's safe haven asset? It's ahead of the game right now. Right now, it's mostly adoption speculation, right? Because it's so early, and the price is so low compared to what it could be in the future. Is that we're gonna have these volatile adoption cycles? But yeah, like the natural essence of Bitcoin is that it is a safe haven. It's hard to confiscate. It's hard to block. It's hard to seize. It's really, really almost impossible to inflate it, and yeah, that's beautiful. It is definitely a safe haven. But if Financial Times starts posting about it more being a safe haven, then I think people will start believing it sooner, and that'll be fucking beautiful.
Yes. So shout out to the good people at the Financial Times: Francis Coppola, Isabella Kaminsky, Jamina, all you beautiful Financial Times writers who love Bitcoin. Shout out to your publication. We really enjoy you helping us push this true narrative forward, Bitcoin as a safe haven. So cheers to you on this 4th of July. And with that being said, Matt, we're out of topics. We're out of time here. You have any final words?
That police siren, I think, passed Marty. That's not in your rearview mirror. So
yeah.
It's important. Here at TFTC, we have police sirens often in our recordings. We're working on that.
Just be aware. You always got to have your head on a swivel. We do it intentionally to make sure everybody's aware at all times.
I just cheers to the freaks. Enjoy your friends and family today. Those are who are in America. Enjoy work today if you're anywhere else in the world, because we do luckily have listeners throughout the world. And stay humble and stack sats.
Yeah, guys. And especially you Americans today celebrating Independence Day, reflect on the power of Bitcoin as a revolution and fighting for financial sovereignty in the digital age. With that, we'll end it there. Peace and love, freaks.